In an abandoned adobe farmhouse, Martha Estes sat at a table, her arms lashed to a chair, with only a crumbling wall to stare at. Quinn entered and stood between her and that unpromising vista.
You are the most disgusting, foul, misbegotten piece of human refuse I have ever laid eyes upon. Your every act shames your mother and father.
Ah, me mother, God rest her soul, is dead these 20 long years, and me father's a drunk who would not feel insult if someone crapped in his hat.
When Clifton discovers how you have treated me, he'll have you horsewhipped.
Now you've got the right of it, lass. He's not got the balls to do it himself. Now it's well and good it is that you know I'll never be carrying out me threats against you. That was for those dogs from town. Let them be worrying over it, you know. But between you and me, and Lord, there's something I'd like to have between you and me, there is. Before this is over, I intend to get to know you better. Intimately better, if you catch my meaning.
I'll see you in hell before that happens.
Will you know? And what's to stop me, huh? All I need to do is hoist them skirts and have at you with a will.
Here in the carriage outside, Quinn took two hasty back steps. Clifton Satterly stormed through the doorway. His face flushed, he pointed a gloved, covered forefinger at Quinn.
That lout of yours out there tells me that you have Martha Estes in here as a prisoner, trussed up like a Christmas goose.
Patty gestured to his prisoner. As though jerked by a string, Satterly took two steps toward the woman and then turned on Quinn.
Release her! At once! My dear, this is inexcusable. I'll have you freed in a moment. And I promise you, nothing like this will ever happen again. Where is Lupe?
She's being held someplace else.
Quinn, you will finish untying this young lady, then you will go and fetch her maid. And be certain that she has with her everything needed to restore Miss Martha to her usual loveliness.
She ran away from you. Did you know that? I didn't send men to take her, I didn't. She went off with none other than Smoke Jensen.
Satterly cut his eyes from Quinn to Martha.
Is that true?
Yes and no. I left on my own. I encountered Mr. Jensen on the road, and he was to escort me here to Taos. I felt so terrible when I learned that the jewelry you gave me had been stolen, and that they were sacred objects to the Indians here. I wanted to do what I could to make amends.
Lies! Jensen must have told you that. It is not true. Trust me in that.
I talked with a young Indian policeman who identified the necklace I wore when they visited in Santa Fe.
A copy, perhaps?
They do not make copies.
Come, my dear. Let's put all of that behind us. I am so relieved to find you safe and sound.
Not so safe nor so sound if that one had his way.
Clifton Satterly rounded on Quinn again.
I thought I gave you an order. Now do it!
You may regret this, Mr. Satterly.
Quinn undid Martha's bounds while Satterly winced as though the threat had hit home. In that instant after her release, Martha bounded upright and made a break for the door. Before Satterly could react, Quinn passed him in a flash and snagged Martha by one arm.
Not so fast, me fine Colleen.
She clawed at Patty Quinn, scratched his cheek and neck, kicked him in the shins and pounded one small fist on his chest. While she struggled, Clifton Satterly took it in. Then Martha tried to knee Patty in the crotch. He hurled her against the wall. Martha's face turned pale white. Clifton Satterly studied her with new eyes.
Perhaps I have been hasty. I may have misjudged you, Mr. Quinn. Yes, I think I far underrated Martha's spirit. It seems that for the time being you will have to detain her forcibly if she persists in such unbecoming activity.
Patty Quinn touched fingers to his cheek that came away bloody. Then he saluted his employer with a tap to the brim of his hat.
I'll say to it right away, that I will. And when that's done, there are some changes I want to discuss with you as to the taking of the town of Taos.
She Shortly before the hour deadline, Smoke Jensen came to Santantosa with a suggestion.
I want you to gather your warriors. Have them start to drum. Do a war dance out in plain view of Quinn's gang.
We haven't done a war dance in 50 years. This will be a true pleasure. We'll make it look very bloodthirsty indeed. Lots of leaping in the air and swinging war clubs and knives.
20 minutes later, a drum began to throb in the outskirts of Taos. Two warriors started to prance and stomp in a circle around a large fire. Knife blades flashed in the sunlight. Some among the outlaws became visibly uncomfortable. Several exchanged knowing glances. They had heard the rumors about scalping. Some few did not want to test it any further. Two drifters went for their horses. 5 minutes later, three more who were not part of the gang held a whispered conference, nodded agreement, and left for parts unknown. Meanwhile, Smoke eased himself into the gorge that contained the stream bed and set off to locate Martha Estes and her maid. Smoke followed the creek upstream to the southwest until well past the ring of outlaws. Then, he led Cougar up out of the ravine and mounted. Carefully, he worked his way back toward the siege lines. He left Cougar behind a screen of young Palo Verdes and proceeded afoot. Bent double, he presented a far diminished profile to any eyes that might look outward instead of toward town. There would be few places where Martha might be kept, he reasoned. With silent determination, he set about eliminating those. 10 minutes went by. Smoke found himself on a small produce farm. No doubt the Mexican owner sold to the general store in Taos and to others who happened by. Yes, there, beyond the woodsheds, barn and a house, a palapa had been erected over a stair-stepped set of shelves. Baskets of peppers and fresh vegetables lined them. Two small boys under the age of 13 or so kept watch. Smoke eased his way up to the side of one shack. A farmer sat, working a pedal power whetstone to sharpen a machete.
You see, senor? Have any of the ladrones around Taos come around here?
The man shook his head in the negative.
Have you seen any of them taking a young woman somewhere?
I see. Early this morning, I was turning water into my corn. Two men rolled over toward the old Oliveira place. They had a woman with them. She did not look happy.
Smoke asked for and was given directions, and he headed that way. He had covered half a mile when he came upon several layers of lookouts. Smoke skirted the men easily and continued on. He approached an adobe building from the rear. Through a small, high window, he had a clear view of the interior. Across the room, he saw a large loft, obviously where the family slept when they lived here. In the middle of the room, he noted a small table, and seated at two sides of it were Martha and her maid. They had been tied tightly to their chairs. To one side, Smoke observed Patty Quinn and two of his men in the room conferring. There wouldn't be time enough to take out Quinn and his fast guns and free both women. This small farm lay too close to the ring of outlaws. Any exchange of gunfire would draw 24 gunmen in seconds. He could not free them, but he had a firm belief that Satterley would not want her harmed.
Ah, you're right, Hubert. These two are poison. And I think we can get away with it if we do it that way, I do. We'll just take them out in the desert and lose them somewhere.
Clifton will have you gelded if you actually go through with killing me. You heard what he said when he had you bring my maid here.
That was news to Smoke. The criminal overlord was here now. That gave him some fresh ideas. Quietly, he slipped away, heading back for Cougar and a ride to town. When the hour deadline arrived, Smoke strode out to where Quinn had confronted them earlier. It didn't surprise Smoke when he found none of the outlaws present.
Particularly no torturers and no Martha Estes.
Suddenly, rifle fire broke out on two sides of town. The outlaw gang had opened an attack on Taos in earnest. Smoke could not understand why the entire force that ringed the defenders didn't press the engagement. He needn't have speculated. Smoke had no sooner than reached the line of houses that defined the city limits than riders thundered down the slope where he and Diego had met with Quinn. They opened fire as the range closed. Immediately, Smoke ducked behind a low adobe wall and drew a .45 Colt. Two 44 slugs slammed into the outer face of the brown mud bricks, which sent a plume of dust upward to obscure Smoke's vision. He triggered a round, and a hard case's right arm went limp and useless. But that concentrated more fire on Smoke's position. He couldn't stay in such an exposed place for long. Sheriff Hank Banner sat propped up in a bed by rolled blankets and plump pillows. At his insistence, Dr. Walters had rolled the bed over close to a window. Now, he stood in exasperation at his patient's next request.
I'll do no such a thing, Hank Banner.
Oh, come on, Adam. We got the fight of our lives going on out there, and I ain't in it. Hell, man, even you got a six-gun strapped on.
Oh, that's to protect my patients and my medical equipment.
You gave Pedro Alvarado a rifle? All I'm asking is you get me one, too.
Pedro's 30 years younger than you, Hank, and he's ambulatory. Besides, how are you going to operate a Winchester from that bed?
Easily, if you'll give me a rifle and open the damn window. I mean it now, Adam. I can see out of both eyes now. Things ain't so fuzzy I'd shoot one of the town folks. I'm a sheriff, and by damn it's my duty to help defend the people out there. Shit! That does it. They're shooting at me, I've got the right to shoot back.
Damn it all to hell, Hank.
Dr. Walters stormed out of the infirmary, only to return quickly with a Winchester and a box of cartridges.
Here, try not to shoot yourself in the damn leg.
Ian McGregor held his own from his second floor room in the hotel. He had been on town patrol duty during the night and had returned to grab a few hours sleep, only to have the attack break out after only 40 minutes rest. Over his sight, he saw one hard case who appeared to be directing the action of a dozen others in a push to breach the defenses to the south of town. It was a long shot for a rifle, but Mac retained the confidence of youth. He elevated his aim to the maximum. Below, the section leader jerked in his saddle, then slowly folded forward at the waist and dropped away. Mac sought another target. He found one much closer than he would have liked. A hard case ran out of the mouth of an alley and randomly discharged his weapon upward toward the second floor windows. Mac pulled a quick bead.
If this keeps up, we're going to reduce these idiots by half easy.
Someone else had figured out the same thing as Mac. Slowly, the outlaws began to withdraw from town, yet they continued to pour a withering fire on the defenders from a distance outside towns. Whitewater Paddy Quinn sought out his second in command.
We've given it any more time, then go back! I want to get that bastard Smoke Jensen in me sights, and that's a goddamn fact!
I've heard he's hard to kill. So far, I have no reason to doubt that. How many did we lose?
Quinn raised a hand and swept the hillside.
That's what I want you to find out, boyo. Didn't seem to me that half the lads went in there came back. With losses like that, we can't keep this up for long. Whether Mr. Saturday likes it or not, we may have to use fire to drive those stubborn folk out.
He'll have a fit if we do, but I agree with you. We can't let him whittle us down like that much longer. When do we go back?
Have the boys cease fire. Find out where we stand, and we'll give it an hour.
Ezekiel Crowder and Ed Hubbard had taken positions on the south side of town, close to Smoke Jensen. They observed the ominous approach of a large body of outlaws. They exchanged a worried glance and tightened grip on their weapons.
Steady! Hold it! Let them come in real close! Make every shot count!
Smoke knew it wouldn't happen that way. Excitement or fear would make the inexperienced men fire carelessly. They would rush their aim and no doubt jerk the trigger, and it would only get worse when the outlaws opened fire. Some, though, he knew, would make good account of themselves, like young Mac. Smoke had done a quick inspection during the lull and figured some 20 outlaws had gotten inside the town. Perimeter defenses had to be shored up. He had arranged for that, though only just in time.
We have to keep them from entering town this time.
A few seconds later, Ed Hubbard proved a better gun hand than expected, although he did jump the gun. He cleared two saddles in rapid succession.
Hey! Did you see that?
The hard cases opened up. Ed fired again and hit Dutch Volker in the side. It was a severe enough wound to put him out of action. With a blistering backward look, Dutch steered his mount away from the conflict. He'd get patched up and come back later. Smoke had other ideas for him. He took took careful aim with his 45-7500 Winchester Express. Volker's head snapped forward and back as a bullet bore through his brain and exited the front, taking with it his entire forehead. The defending fire increased from other points. Hubbard and Crowder so far remained calm. They took time to aim and work the action of their rifles in a controlled manner and shoved fresh cartridges into the magazine between shots.
You're doing all right for a fireman, Zeke.
So are you, shopkeeper. Damn, I'd sell my soul for a shot of whiskey and a cold beer right now.
Yeah, if I was the devil, I'd take you up on that.
The way they're coming, this could last until sundown.
Good God almighty, I hope not.
Sheriff Banner thought much the same as Chief Crowder. From his vantage point, he watched a huge gang swirl around Taos. Here and there, one would slump in the saddle or fall to the ground. Not nearly enough of them, though. He watched as three of them charged a barricade made of two overturned wagons. The mounts easily cleared the obstacle, but he had one of the men in his sights before the hooves touched ground. His bullet drilled the outlaw through the chest. The fierce fighting continued throughout the afternoon. Smoke Jensen made periodic visits to the defenders positioned on the outer edges of Taos. He always had a word of encouragement and usually replacement ammunition. Braving the chance of a bullet, the older boys of the town, organized by Wally Gower, brought food and water to the fighting men. The fury promised to go on forever. When night fell, the gang withdrew, much to the relief of everyone. To their immediate discomfort, the defenders of Tao soon discovered that the enemy had not gone far enough so that anyone could escape. Smoke Jensen's words were not greeted with enthusiasm when he made his dark prediction. They would return come the morrow.
They're coming back!
The weary protectors of Taos emerged from uneasy sleep. Too many of the townspeople moved with a lethargy that they would soon regret. Caught between their homes and fighting stations, most looked on in numbed horror as the outlaws easily penetrated the thin defenses and streamed into town.
We ain't got a chance this time. We're goners for sure.
Quit your whining. Take your weapons and form up in the streets. We can stop them easier when they don't have room to maneuver.
Oh, say, that's right. We can trap them between the buildings. It'll be like shooting fish in a water trough.
Now you're talking, Elwell. That's the idea. Get to it.
Smoke's confidence started to rise as he came upon the more reliant among the defenders. Those two of warriors not on water watch were the first to respond. Santantosa stood on one side of the Plaza de Armas and directed his fighting men to vantage points on the roofs of buildings. On two sides of the town, Don Diego's vaqueros labored valiantly to keep more of the trash from entering town.
Buena suerte, compañeros! Shoot their eyes out!
Gradually, men caught by surprise on the west side of town began to calm and take better stock of their situation. Smoke exhorted.
This isn't the end of it. Not unless you want to go belly up. Get some backbone, damn it! All of you there! Quit milling around and form up the drive and trap those who got past the barricade in the center of town!
As the first of the remotivated men spread out, more joined them. Before long, they had enough to ring the business district and began to close in. From the moment of the first encounter, fighting grew more fierce with each passing minute. Smoke Jensen soon saw that the outer defenses had been completely breached. The vaqueros fought valiantly as they retreated street by street from the pressure put on them by the Quinn gang.
With Our Lady, Holy Mother of Guadalupe, kill them! Kill!
Even Smoke Jensen developed chills down his spine the first time he heard that phrase. But he had to admit it had a galvanizing effect. The vaqueros swarmed back down the street, a wall of death with a six-gun rifle and knife. On the next street over, the vaqueros put a full dozen to flight. Horses surged into one another and spilled two riders to face the advancing fury of the Mexican cowboys. Paddy Quinn shoved his way into a cantina to catch his breath and reload. He found Garth Thompson there ahead of him. Whitewater Paddy flashed a big grin.
We're doing fine. Another half hour and the town will be ours.
Are you kidding? We have men dying out there by the handful. It doesn't make sense. These townies are fighting back like madmen.
Ah, trust me, Bucko. You're not seeing clear, you're not. Most of those who are being killed are not part of the gang. Well, that class is here for us to soak up bullets for us, it is. Let's go upstairs so we can see better what's really happening. You'll be surprised how good it's going, you will.
But Paddy Quinn was mistaken. Gradually, the tide turned. The shock of their earlier failure began to wear off. The men of Tau ceased in their headlong flight from the threat of the gunmen. They turned back in twos and threes in one place, half a dozen in two others. Instead of two men fighting a desperate rear guard while the others fled, a mass of harried men turned about and lashed out at their enemy.
Fire! Open fire!
Throughout the town, the spirit of defeat disappeared. The defenders charged in a massive counterattack. Determined men soon swept the byways of Tau to the dregs of humanity who had attacked them. The only resistance that remained centered around the saloon named Cantina del Sol. Smoke Jensen reached that strong point in the vanguard of the revived defenders. Eight relatively capable gunfighters had been stationed outside the cantina to protect their leaders. They listened to the shift in mood among the defenders with growing apprehension. When four of them rounded the corner with a determined stride, the outlaws realized that the seeming ease of their capture of the town was an illusion. Weapons already in hand, the townsfolk had the advantage when the hard cases reached for their six guns. Mid-morning came and went. Smoke Jensen decided it was time to get in Cantina del Sol. He sent four vaqueros around to the rear to make a show of breaking in through the service point. It gave him just enough time to be convincing. Then dived low through the front doorway. Smoke hit the floor and did a roll to come up with his Colt blazing. A townsman and one of Diego's vaqueros entered behind the mountain man. Flame gushed from the muzzles of their six guns. Ears ringing from the enclosed gunfire, Smoke made for the stairwell. There had to be some damn reason why the eight men had been guarding this place. He'd reached the first riser when another of the gunmen appeared at the top of the stairs. Smoke acted at once. He sent a .45 round winging upward to seal the fate of the hard case who menaced him. The outlaw staggered back and rammed slack shoulders into the wall of the upper hallway. Smoke paused at the landing and called back to the ground floor to one of the vaqueros.
Joaquin, come up here with me. Stay here. Watch my back.
Smoke set off to search the rooms in the rear portion of the second floor. Someone of importance had to be up here. His gut feeling was telling him. He readied himself at the first door, cocked his leg, and planted a boot beside the doorknob. A loud crack. The panel flew inward. Following his six gun, Smoke entered the room in a crouch. Empty. He turned on one heel and started out. Smoke readied himself at the next door. His explosive entry caught two outlaws with their backs to him, taking shots at Tau's residents in the street below. One spun around in a blur of movement. His eyes went wide as he gazed at death with an outstretched hand. Smoke shot drove the bandit backward and crashed through the window, taking both sashes with him as he fell to the ground. The second hard case wisely released his revolver and threw up his hands.
I give! I give!
Smoke Jensen stepped up close and rapped him on the skull with the barrel of a Colt. That left three more rooms to check. The next proved even more empty than the first. It didn't even have furniture. Smoke moved on to the next in line. His vicious kick surprised Garth Thompson and Paddy Quinn in the act of reloading. Thompson swung his six gun up first. The man from the Sugarloaf fired a round which ripped into the body of Garth Thompson a fraction of an instant before the outlaw's bullet punched a neat hole in the left side of Smoke Jensen's waist. It burned like hellfire, but it didn't even stagger Smoke. Thompson tried to fire again, not realizing he looked at his target with a dead man's eye. Smoke turned his attention to Paddy Quinn. Stunned by the swiftness of action by Smoke Jensen, Paddy Quinn had only belatedly closed the loading gate of his Colt Peacemaker. Instinctively, he knew he didn't have time for a shot, not if he wanted to continue living. Instead, he put his energy to his legs and sprinted past the wounded Jensen out into the hall. Smoke bit back the pain that burned in his side and turned in pursuit. Out in the hall, Paddy Quinn raced toward the far end of the building. A window in the center of the corridor there bore a sign above it that read fire escape. Smoke Jensen staggered down the bare board floor behind Quinn. The outlaw leader made better time. Paddy Quinn threw his arms up to cover his face and hurtled through the glass partition. Fragments of the sashes clung to him as he hit the small square projection that served as a platform for a ladder. Legs still churning, Paddy cleared the railing in a single bound, dropped out of sight before smoke reached the shattered window casement. But Quinn landed flat-footed and hard on the packed earth below. Pain shot up his leg from a broken heel bone. His horse and those of Thompson and another hard case had been tied off at the rear door earlier in the day. So unexpected and precipitous had been his arrival from above that the vaqueros sent to break in the rear stood in immobile surprise while Paddy limped to his mount, retrieved the reins, and swung into the saddle. Smoke Jensen sent a bullet after Paddy Quinn as the latter called out to his men.
Pull back! Get clear of town! We've lost it for now!
Clifton Satterly paced the confined space in the ruined adobe farmhouse. He rounded on Paddy Quinn.
What do you mean you had the town taken and then got pushed out? How can that happen?
Smoke Jensen, that's how it happened. It killed Garth, he did, and he near to finished me in the bargain. He found out somehow where we were and come after us with some of those Mexicans.
Better you and a dozen like you die than I lose Taos.
Pardon me, Mr. Satterly. Sir, there's no denying you're smart and all that, but truth to tell, your chances of taking Taos without me are somewhere between slim and nothing they are.
Clifton Satterly raised a fist as though to strike the gang leader.
Then get out there, gather up what men you have left, and go back! And keep on going back until their resistance crumbles! Bryce, you're going with them.
Bryce Noble gaped at his partner. He knew himself to be good with his guns, better than most of the petty criminals in Quinn's gang, but he realized he was not any sort of gunfighter like Smoke Jensen. That man was entirely too good.
You're not serious. What could I possibly do?
Oh, you could be like a famous general, an inspiration to the men.
That's uncalled for. There's simply no reason for me to go there.
Oh, but there is, because I insist. Now get going and bring back a town on its knees!
Shortly after noon, the gang came back to Taos. Those in the lead met with a shower of wine bottle grenades. Black powder bombs exploded with bright flashes. The shards of their containers and the scraps of metal within sped through the air. Pieces bit into vulnerable flesh, both equine and human. Fighting rose toward a crescendo. Paddy Quinn had centered nearly all of his men on one side of the town. Only a few snipers and riders kept the defenders on the other three sides occupied. As the volume of fire increased at the center of the offensive...
They broke! They broke! They're running! Forward!
The allies could no longer withstand the onslaught. Outlaws poured into the gap in the line and spread out through the streets of Taos. Pushed to the forefront of the vanguard, Bryce Noble found himself the first to enter the small town. When the resistance melted away, his confidence soared. This was going to be easier than he had expected. His horse trotted down the narrow avenue toward the center of town. At the Plaza de Armas, Noble saw a tall, broad-shouldered man directing the fight. He was forcefully snatching demoralized residents off their feet and shoving them into a position from which they could engage the invaders. His calm demeanor told Bryce Noble that if they were to succeed, this man had to be eliminated. He edged closer and formed the words of a challenge as he raised his revolver to accomplish that.
Look out, Smoke!
Smoke Jensen turned his cold gaze on the man who sought to kill him. He backed it up with the muzzle of a .45 Colt. Instantly, fear eroded Bryce Noble's guts, and he swallowed his provocation. He lowered his right arm and released the six gun. It dropped to the grass while Noble raised his hands over his head.
I surrender. I've not fired my weapon. Don't shoot me, Mr. Jensen.
Get down.
Smoke's command moved Noble with alacrity. He swung a leg over and dismounted while Smoke walked up to him.
Who are you?
I'm Bryce Noble, the business associate of Clifton Satterly.
Smoke's hard fist connected with the lantern jaw of Bryce Noble.
Somebody drag this piece of dog shit to jail.
Diego Alvarado sought a single man among the outlaws. His wide experience in fighting a variety of enemies told him that the majority of these vermin would flee if they lost their leader. Smoke Jensen had killed Garth Thompson that morning. That left only Paddy Quinn. He left Alejandro and Miguel in charge of the Vaqueros and started off to locate the gang boss. Mayor Arianas, an old friend, approached him as Diego crossed the Plaza de Armas.
Diego, I'm astonished at the valor of the two warriors. They fight for us as though this was their town.
They know that if Taos falls, their pueblo will be right behind. Satterly wants everything around here. I, for one, am grateful for their aid.
As am I, amigo.
Arianas paused a moment, uncertain of the propriety of his next question.
May I ask, where are you going? Most of your men are on the east side.
Don't worry, my friend. I am looking for Paddy Quinn. When I find him, I am going to kill him and end this madness.
Buena suerte, then.
Gracias. I can use all the luck I can manage.
Diego Alvarado strode off, headed north. As he went by the flight of granite steps that fronted the church on the plaza, he automatically crossed himself and cast a reverent glance at the impressive structure. Padre Luis threw wide the tall oak doors and stepped out onto the wide flagstones at the top of the stairs. He addressed the confused and demoralized defenders who huddled in the plaza.
Men of Taos, rally your strength! Fight for your freedom! Remember your women and children! Drive out the invaders!
Padre Luis jerked and swayed, a large red stain spreading on the shoulder of his cassock. Diego Alvarado looked in the direction from which the shot had come. Seated on his horse was the man he sought. Paddy Quinn had a smoking six gun in his hand and a nasty sneer on his face.
Easy for you to say, Padre! You who hides behind your own skirt!
Paddy Quinn raised his revolver for another shot. Diego Alvarado filled his hand with his Obregon 45 with all the smoothness and almost the speed of Smoke Jensen. He cocked and fired in one even motion. The bullet took Quinn in the belly. He winced, but somehow seemed otherwise affected. His icy black eyes turned on Diego.
So, cowherder, you defy me one last time, do you know? The Padre can wait then. This is between you and me, big buckle.
Quinn fired the Colt in his hand. The slug cut a deep, painful gouge across the top of Diego's left shoulder. Alvarado fired the Obregon again. His aim off because of his wound, he nailed Quinn in the right thigh. The Irishman fell and sprawled on the cobbles that paved the street in front of the church. Paddy Quinn was about to learn how mistaken he had been in shooting a priest. Suddenly, the peons, who did not possess firearms, swarmed over the fallen outlaw. Sunlight glinted off the well-honed edges of their machetes. Their arms rose and fell. Blood streaming from his own wound, Diego Alvarado hurried to the injured priest.
Padre, you are hurt. I will get the doctor.
Care for your own wound, Diego. God will tend to my needs.
Dr. Walters can give God a lot of help. Let me take you inside. Then I will go for the doctor. Whitewater Paddy Quinn has answered for his crimes here. Now I hope he burns in the hottest corner of hell.
Word quickly spread about the demise of Paddy Quinn. It restored the fighting spirit of those who protected Taos, especially when they learned how and why he had died. It proved to have the opposite effect on the outlaws. Leaderless and with no assurance of being paid, the hangers-on deserted in droves. Harried by the emboldened townsmen, they streamed out of the city and made tracks towards Raton. The first two dozen to desert opened the floodgates. Fighting continued for another 20 minutes while the headlong flight reduced the number of outlaws by more than half. Hungry for revenge, the guardians of Taos roamed from building to building, street to street. Those outlaws who offered resistance, they gunned down. The wiser ones, they drove ahead of them. Smoke Jensen and Diego Alvarado led two-thirds of them, Santantosa the remainder. Within half an hour, the streets had been cleared.
Now what?
A tired, powder-grimed Diego Alvarado stared at Smoke over the top of a tubo of beer. A thick bandage bulged under his coat.
Do you think they will be back?
There's always a chance that they will, though I hope not. We've lost 15 men killed, and twice that wounded. If there's none of them left except the original gang, they can overwhelm us, given the right leader. To keep that from happening, I reckon to go out late tonight and cut off the head of the snake. That'll end it once and for all.
I want to go along.
And welcome you'll be, Alejandro. Now, let's drink up and get something to eat. We need to rest before going out there.
Listen to me, men. We have to control Taos in order for our development scheme to succeed. You will all be rewarded. And most generously, I might add. In fact, I will offer you a bonus of one half your original share if you will agree to do what must be done. You will remain here on the outskirts of Taos and deny the people in town any contact with the outside. Cut off their food supply. Shoot any armed man you see on the streets. In short, maintain the siege until more men can be recruited and sent here to make the final push.
Satterley paused and let his gaze sweep over the assembled outlaws.
Do you understand what I'm saying? The whole project now depends upon you. You have good leaders in Yank Hastings, Vic Tyson, and Coop Ellis.
Cooper Smith Ellis flushed slightly at the praise.
What I want is for you to do this. Return to positions well out of rifle range and encircle the town again. Concentrate on the roads. Roving patrols can take care of anyone who tries to slip away across the fields. That's simple, isn't it? When enough men reach here for another attack, go at it with a will. Don't let anything stop you.
While the remotivated gunmen started out to take their new positions, Clifton Satterley huddled with Cole Granger and explained privately what else he had in mind. Darkness had covered Taos 3 hours earlier when Smoke Jensen and Alejandro Alvarado left town to spy out the enemy. It had taken that long for the gang to settle down. Some of them still had strong reservations about staying there. Smoke and Alejandro slipped quietly through their line, headed for the adobe ruin where Smoke had earlier seen Martha.
I think this is damn foolishness.
Biggs is right. Without Whitewater Patty, we got no one to stand up to this Satterley. Who says he'll for real pay us when it's over?
Right. I say we walk our horses out of here right now, hit the high road to Santa Fe, and don't look back.
Hell yes! Those Injuns could be out there sneaking around with their scalping knives right this minute.
Oh, hell, don't even mention that. Gives me cold chills.
Smoke and Alejandro crept on in the moonless night. When they reached the spot where Smoke thought the building should be, they found nothing. Smoke motioned for Alejandro to separate from him and look for the adobe. Quietly, both men went about finding the place. Smoke located it first and saw that the farmhouse was unlighted. Had everyone gone to sleep? Somehow, he doubted that. Moments later, Alejandro joined him, having made a wide half-circle.
I want to get a look inside. But if you were to ask me, I'd say the place is deserted. No lights, no guards.
Smoke's speculation proved correct. He quickly discovered that Martha and Lupe no longer occupied the chairs. The table where they had sat had been overturned. He saw no sign of Clifton Satterley either.
We should check along the line of fires where the watchers remain at the roadblocks.
A careful search among the watchers revealed no sign of Martha Estes, her maid, or Clifton Satterley. When they approached the last of the barricades, Smoke suddenly realized that Alejandro's appearance would give him away. Smoke made an abrupt signal that told the youthful caballero to wait outside the firelight and cover him while he went in to talk with the outlaws. Alejandro disappeared into the night, and Smoke continued to the fireside.
Quiet as a graveyard.
Damn, you could have picked a better way to put it. What are you doing here anyway?
You got coffee going, and I smelled it. So, here I am.
Well,
Pour yourself a cup, then.
Smoke took a blue granite tin cup and filled it.
Here's the big boss. He was so hot for a staying here.
Didn't have the grit to stay here himself. A little while after that pep talk, he took the women and Granger and then hightailed it out of here. Off to Santa Fe, I reckon.
He's going to get more men. Remember what he said about sending us some fresh blood?
Yeah. Blood is what it'll be, you ask me.
Smoke let him talk on for a while, then drained his coffee and handed back the cup.
Yeah, thanks for the brew. I'd best get back to roving from place to place, or someone will have a hissy fit.
Yeah, so, you with Vic Tyson's crew?
Yep, for better or for worse. See you, fellas.
Once reunited with Alejandro Alvarado, Smoke Jensen and the Ranchero made a rapid return to town. On the way, Smoke weighed the alternatives facing him, and he didn't like any of them. Back in the sheriff's office, he sent loungers to summon a war council. This was going to be a long night.
There's nothing for it but that I go after him.
Mayor Fidel Arellanos nodded thoughtfully.
I can understand that. But how are you going to go about it?
First, we have to break this siege. They're mighty spooked over two defeats in one day, and we've not attacked them at night before. What we're going to do is organize an assault force from the local volunteers and Diego's vaqueros and wipe out their roadblocks, scatter the patrols around the town, and plain raise a lot of hell.
Muy bien, amigo. Naturally, all of my men will volunteer.
We only need half of them, Don Diego. Someone has to hold the fort. Gather 5 groups of 10 each and meet me in the Plaza de Armas in half an hour. One bunch will take each road out of town. The 5th will make a sweep of the roving patrols. Tonight, we're going to kick the hell out of these scum.
30 minutes later, grim-faced men gathered in the plaza. All were heavily armed. Every man had a horse. Smoke quietly gave them their assignments and moved out with those going after the mobile pickets. When everyone had gotten into position, they watched the hands on one of the clocks located on the 4 sides of the church steeple. The minute hand closed on 10:45, and the deadly bands moved out. 300 yards from the roadblocks, they urged their mounts to a gallop. Weapons out and ready, they opened fire at 75 yards. With Quinn and Thompson dead and Satterly gone, the outlaw trash had little heart for a fight. In 20 minutes, the last of the vermin had been exterminated or surrendered.
Thank you all for what you've done. You've saved your town. Take this trash back to town and jail. The end of this is up to me. I'm going after Clifton Satterly. Mac, Alejandro, I'd like you to come with me. We'll take about 25 men to handle any opposition Satterly can muster. Even with them, it's going to be mighty hard to end this.
Smoke, Alejandro, and Mac rode out of Taos at the head of a 23-man force. Even pushing to the limit, they would not reach Santa Fe until early morning of the next day. Smoke used the time to review how they should go about cornering Satterly. His options were limited, that he accepted. He had no way of knowing how many gun hands Satterly might have at the large estancia outside the territorial capital. Whatever the count, he wanted to keep the number of injuries and deaths small among his volunteers. Most of all, he wanted to give Mac a chance at building a satisfying life for himself. All such considerations aside, he wanted it to end quickly. Could he count on the sheriff in Santa Fe? That question remained with him as they rode through Española. False dawn caught him still 2 miles from Satterly's lair. To Smoke, that answered his preoccupation with the sheriff, because they simply did not have time to ride past the road that led to the ranch and into Santa Fe. They were going to have to do it on their own. 1/2 mile from the estancia, Smoke halted his small force.
Mac, I want you to take charge of everyone but Alejandro and myself. Take on any gun hands Satterly has at the ranch and keep them busy. Alejandro and I will go in to find Martha, also to get Satterly. If something happens to let us open the gates for you, we will.
I want to go with you, Smoke.
Not this time. Keep in mind, youngster, that you're only 15 years old. Now, I'm not going to coddle you, but I want you in a responsible position, doing something that has to be done, something that keeps you out of the center of most danger.
But I want to be there to help.
Hell, boy. You're going to get shot anyway. Why make it worse?
Grudgingly, Max saw his point.
I'll do my best, Smoke. Count on it.
Alejandro nodded silent approval. He couldn't help but like this mannish boy.
I think my father will find it impossible to continue his food production without you, young Mac. We want you around to make our gardens more productive.
Yes, sir. Alejandro, did I ever call you Alex?
Only my gringo friends. So, I suppose you can, too.
Well, let's get to it, then. Mac, circle wide around and hit the place from the rear. Once you have their attention, we'll come at them from the front.
A short while later, Mac and his mixed force invaded the walls around three sides of the hacienda. Under the cover of darkness, Smoke and Alejandro approached the front gate in the 12-foot wall that surrounded the compound. Smoke had a little surprise that he had not mentioned to the others. He quickly went to work, sheltered by the inset of the massive portals.
Alejandro, gather up all the big rocks you can find. Bring them here.
Diego's eldest son went to work with a twinkle in his eyes because of the sight of the cylindrical sticks in Smoke's hands. By the time Alejandro returned for the sixth time, Smoke had attached a bundle of five sticks of dynamite to the center of the gate where the crossbar would be.
Now, mix the mud.
Smoke bent to place more dynamite against one of the hinges. Alejandro found water in a horse trough and plenty of desert soil right where they needed it. He carried the liquid in his hat to make a quagmire under the sheltering lip above him. When he thought he had it right, he stopped to watch Smoke packing rocks against the charge on the hinge.
Smoke, it is ready.
Smoke studied the consistency of the mud.
Thicker. Make it sticky.
When it reached the desired texture, Smoke began to pack it around the explosives in the middle of the gate, then poured more over the rocks.
We'll let that dry a while.
The gunfire served well to keep attention off Smoke and Alejandro. After 10 minutes, the surface had returned to its natural color, and cracks began to appear in the mud. Smoke nodded approvingly and bent with a lucifer in his hand.
You light that one, and I'll get this one. Then, we get out of here. Fast.
Smoke and Alejandro ran from the gateway and flattened their backs against the wall to either side.
Impressive, my friend.
Let's go.
Quickly, they rounded the corners that had sheltered them. Alejandro's jaw sagged at the sight of the damage the explosives had wrought. One side of the thick gate hung askew. The other lay flat on the ground, blown out from the bottom. Smoke jumped on top of it and ran into the courtyard. Alejandro followed. They met with no resistance until they reached the main entrance to the hacienda. Two dumbfounded thugs with bestubbled jaws stood inside. Each man made the fateful mistake of reaching for his six-gun. Smoke beat them both. Sidestepping the dying men, Smoke and Alejandro pushed on. Cole Granger and three men waited for him in the inner courtyard.
There they are!
Two others dive for cover behind the cheerily splashing fountain. Granger dropped behind a huge clay pot that held a stunted banana tree. From there, he triggered a round that ripped along the left ribs of Alejandro Alvarado. The young grandee spun to one side. He leaned back against the wall of the arched corridor that connected the front door to the patio.
No, go on, Smoke. I'll be all right.
Alejandro extended his right arm along the wall and took aim at a pale face that appeared above the lip of the fountain. Biting his lip, he squeezed his trigger. The slug slammed into the edge of the marble basin. Water and stone chips showered into the air. The face disappeared, an irregular hole in the center of its forehead. And at once, Smoke Jensen was on the move. He bounded to his left and dropped behind a long, earth-filled planter. Three slugs pounded into the opposite surface. Smoke inched along to the end and hazarded a quick look. Granger had come to his boots, peering across the open garden in an attempt to get a sight on Smoke. Smoke raised his arm and fired at the center line of Granger's body. The bullet smashed into Granger's belly, and he staggered backward. Smoke came to his boots, but he had miscalculated Granger's strength.
Smoke! Look out!
Cole Granger fired a six-gun. A hot tunnel opened in Jensen's left arm. In an instant, he put another bullet in Cole Granger's chest. To Smoke's surprise, Granger absorbed that punishment and turned his gun on Alejandro. He wavered unsteadily. The slug plowed into the chest of Alejandro Alvarado. Smoke raised his point of aim to Granger's face. Smoke blasted the life out of his assailant. Quickly, he bound his arm and changed his empty Colt for the fresh one. Then, Smoke began to search for the final hard case. Alejandro sagged to his knees.
He's gone. Run out to the others.
What about you?
It's no bad. Go on. Find Saturday and get the girl to safety.
Smoke Jensen started for the stairway that led to the second floor. Behind him, a door flew open. Smoke spun on one heel, and another of Satterley's henchmen died. Halfway up the stairs, he paused to reload, then ascended to the open-sided hallway that ran around the upper story. Now the search turned serious. Smoke worked his way out into the open.
Smoke! I can cover you from here.
Smoke nodded and went on. The door he tried was locked from the inside. His 45 peacemaker at the ready. Smoke lined up and kicked the center panel beside the lock case. Made of stout manzanita, the door did not yield.
Son of a bitch!
The door flew open to reveal a frightened and startled Lupe and a bulldog-faced hard case.
Get down!
Lupe dropped and Smoke popped a cap on the outlaw at close range. The slug pierced a forearm and entered a vulnerable chest. Smoke shot him again. A stunned expression washed over the dying gunman's features, and he fell face first to the floor. Smoke pointed to Lupe.
Stay here.
Smoke faced the next door. It, too, was locked. Smoke spun as Mac and three of Diego's cowboys ran into the room and up the stairs.
We got them all, Smoke. Most just gave up.
Stay back.
Smoke slammed his boot sole against the door. Smoke saw a thick-shouldered gunman facing the door and fired. The lout dropped his revolver and clasped his belly with both hands. Smoke entered the room and looked to his left. With a long-legged stride, Clifton Satterley moved across the carpet toward a wide-eyed, visibly shaken Martha Estes. He had a .44 Colt Lightning in his hand. Too late, and knowing it, Smoke swung his peacemaker toward Satterley.
Don't move.
Stop where you are!
Max stormed into the room, eyes fixed on Satterley. Satterley swung his lightning away from Martha and fired. His bullets hit Mac in the notch at the bottom of his throat and punched through Mac's right lung and ripped out his back. Instantly, Clifton Satterley grabbed Martha Estes and pulled her in front of him. Driven backward by the agony of his wounds, Ian McGregor stumbled into the corridor. He teetered on the banister for a precarious moment. Then, his legs went out from under him and he caught himself with his elbows. Smoke did not have time to check the youngster, and he knew it. He faced Satterley, who now held the muzzle of his Colt to Martha's temple.
I'll kill her. So help me, I will. Holster your iron and get out of my way. Let me go, and she won't be harmed.
You're a dead man, Satterley. There's no way you're getting out of here.
Satterley cut his eyes to a large carpet bag on the floor. It bulged with his portable wealth. Two finely wrought pieces of Tua jewelry spilled from the open top.
I'm taking that and her and leaving.
Smoke eyed the loot and then returned his attention to Satterley.
You killed that boy for nothing, Satterley. More than for any other reason, I'm gonna kill you for that.
Not likely, Jensen. I've worked too hard for that. You make a try, and the girl dies.
Suddenly, Martha Estes went limp into the arms of Clifton Satterley. The instant her head fell away from the gun barrel, Smoke Jensen drew with blinding speed. The slug hit Satterley at the top of his nose and pulped the Empire Builder's brain. His body flew from Martha Estes and sprawled across the bed. At once, Martha straightened and opened her eyes, and a big smile came over her face.
I thought you might do that.
You're safe now, Miss Martha. I'll arrange for a passage to your home, if you'll excuse me.
Smoke stepped out into the hall and gazed down at the bloody, sweating, pale-faced Mac.
I guess I'll not be needing that gardening job.
Something stung Smoke's eyes, and he blinked rapidly.
That was a fool thing to do, Mac. But you saved a girl's life. I'm proud of you. I'll see that your family gets your pay.
Thank you, Smoke. It was an honor to fight at your side.
Eyes wet and burning, Smoke Jensen turned away, only to discover that Don Diego Alvarado and his remaining vaqueros had arrived. Smoke went to his friend.
Alejandro took a couple of bad ones.
Yes, I saw. What about you?
I'll live, but Mac didn't make it. I'll have to see that the marshal's office sends his pay to his parents.
The group of survivors walked outside.
Oh, it's a beautiful day.
Still deeply moved by the death of Ian McGregor, Smoke looked across the early morning vista. The rising sun cast a pink hue on the white caps of the Sangre de Cristo range. No matter the cost, peace had returned to Taos and the Tua Pueblo.
Yeah, it's a right nice day.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man 18, Triumph of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1997, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Christopher Sheeran, Dan Stevens, Stephen Carpenter, Tony Nam, David Coyne, Terrence Aceford, Michael Glenn, Yasmin Toizone, Dylan Lynch, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Jeff Allen, Scott McCormick, Michael John Casey, Kimberly Gilbert, Lily Beacon, Christopher Graybill, Colleen Delaney, Johan Detweiler, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nanette Savard, Greg Reinfeld, Tim Carlin, and Nathaniel Perry. Additional Boot Hill Boys by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Dwayne Beeman and Lauren Driller. Graphic audio sound design by Lauren Driller. Additional music by Johan Detweiler and Brian Patton. Smoke Jensen theme by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Rose Elizabeth Supan. If you enjoyed Triumph of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles, and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. All available in graphic audio and road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
He's done the old man proud.
By leaping into the path of danger, Matt Jensen foiled a train robbery in Colorado.
We just killed the engineer. You done open that door in 5 seconds, I'll kill the fireman too.
Hold it, son of a bitch, Strayhorn. It's Jensen. Jensen's on the train.
Get the horses. Let's get out of here.
Now the governor himself has presented Matt with a public reward. But what started on the rails has now moved onto the bloody streets of the world and has taken on a life of its own.
That Jensen fella's one son of a bitch we need to avoid.
Or kill.
I'm here, Hennessy.
Well, we meet again. Only this time you don't have the drop on me. We meet even.
Not entirely even.
Now a frustrated outlaw and his murderous posse have struck again. This time, kidnapping the governor's niece.
If you scream, I'll pull the trigger. That's a good girl. Now get up.
What now?
It all depends.
It depends on what?
Whether or not the governor pays what we're gonna ask him.
Now Matt Jensen, the last mountain man, is riding hard towards an inevitable destiny. One filled with blood and death. That's where Matt will learn how to put a bad man down. And make sure he stays that way.
Damn, you're good. I thought I could beat you. I really thought.
Looks like I'm gonna need a refill, Paul. Shooting people always makes me thirsty.
Don't miss Matt Jensen's Body Count Rise in Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man Number 2, Deadly Train, in Graphic Audio. In post-nuclear America, Rourke learns of a secret attack by neo-fascist commandos that could cripple the new free world.
We got problems, John. Annie and I have been going through the printouts that were all piled up there in the middle of the basement for them to burn. There's a reference to an SS commando unit. It's coming ashore on Molokai in less than half an hour if they're on schedule. They couldn't have been alerted to what was going on here, so they should still be coming.
It's starting again, isn't it? Everything like before. Are people crazy?
We won't let them be crazy this time.
With the fate of Hawaii in the balance, he marshals his SEAL and TAC teams for a counterattack.
Oh, what the hell do we do now? It's more than we thought, huh?
Well, this should be fun.
Fire at will! Fire at will!
But despite the godlike power of John Rourke, the evil of Nazism claws its way back from the brink of destruction.
I heard. As bad as they say?
Worse, I'd imagine, since we don't have a final body count yet. At least 83 dead children so far, and about 15 adults.
John Rourke will find himself pushed to the very edge and beyond.
You want me to be the same damn good guy you always were? For what? Where's your wealth? Where's your power? Where's your happiness? Faithful to some bitch lying in a damn coma?
She's your mother, boy. Don't talk that way. Don't you ever.
Right makes right. There we agree.
Even living legends make mistakes. Don't miss The Survivalist Number 23, Call to Battle, in Graphic Audio.
God forgive me. I killed my own son.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.